long distance. You know, it's just like she's got all these little daughters all around the country. It's wonderful. And she really gets to your heart, man or woman, because she's real and she's genuine. And she's going to talk to us this afternoon of the steps 8 and 9 from this perspective from the 12 and 12. So welcome, Willie.
Nap time. Still Willie, still an alcoholic. Okay, we're going to backtrack a little bit on our principles. We did four this morning with action and courage as our principle. Behind number five is integrity. Dear God, that's a quality that we need to get back into our lives. Just basic integrity. To be able to be counted on. To make commitments and be able to carry them out. To do what we say we're going to do. Integrity. And in six, we pick up the principle of willingness. The willingness to listen. The willingness to try new things. The willingness to listen to other people's opinions. In seven, we pick up and start working on this principle in our life that we want to carry, and that's humility. Because with that humility, we can understand our lives a lot better and know that things aren't happening to us for some terrible, terrible reason we have been picked out. With that humility, we know that we're going to have to go through some storms. We go through the good times, and that the world isn't out to get us, and neither is anyone else. So with that humility in our life and in the 12 and 12, I think it does such a good job of making us understand what humility really is. In step 8 that we're going to start on right now, we pick up the principle of brotherly love, of just a general caring about other people. And this is where we start, is on that 8 and 9, as Charlie and Joe were pointing out. We need to care about other people. I found the beautiful offset of that is the more I cared about you, the more you cared about me. It just has a flip-flop effect. And you don't even know really that it's happening until you try to be patient with other people. Until you try to understand their point of view. And with this just a basic love of all humanity in our lives. And that doesn't mean, you know, hating the hardened criminal and all of that, or loving him. He's a part of the society. But to, as a whole, expect the best out of people. And it's amazing, when I expect the best out of them, that's usually what I get. So I think this brotherly love is a very apropos principle to start putting into our lives and practicing in all of our affairs. This is the one that all we have to do is to make that list. And as the big book points out, these are two that we look at with great dread because we think of all the negative things that we have done to people, at people. Sometimes negative things even that we have done for people that they didn't really want done for them. But we had insisted that we must do it. So it's sort of a spooky thing when we get to 8 and 9, isn't it? To think that we're going to have to actually do this. But see, what's nice in 8 is that all we do is make the list. made a list of all persons we had harmed, and became willing to make amends to them all. Steps 8 and 9 are concerned with personal relations. First, it says, we take a look backwards and try to discover where we have been at fault. Next, we make a vigorous attempt to repair that damage that we have done. And third, having thus cleared away the debris of our past, we consider how, with our newfound knowledge of ourselves, we may develop the best possible relations with every human being that we know. I know a lot of people will put out a lot of effort around AA people to be nice and to do things for them and everything, but that's not what it's asking us here. It says every human being that we know. And I talked about this morning the little orbits that we live in. Now, we've changed orbits, most of us, this weekend. We're in a different little orbit. That means I'm trying to be courteous to the lady down there at the desk. I try to be courteous to the girls that come in and clean the rooms. Because that's, for this weekend, this is my little orbit, Palm Air. And I have to take that human being regard that I've tried to put into my life and practice in all my affairs, I have to put that in to the little lady that's cleaning my room and to the lady at the desk. If I have a complaint, I can do it nicely just as well. And I, like down home we say, and y'all say too, you know, you can catch a lot more flies with that honey. I don't know what you want to do after you catch the flies, but at least you got rid of them out of the kitchen. But you can make a complaint and make it nicely and usually come out better. Because when you walk up, I spend a lot of time in airports. And dear Lord, those poor little old girls that don't have a thing, they don't even know how to fly an airplane. They're just the little girls that check you in at the counter. And sometime I have listened to tirades against them. Some man has missed an airplane or missed a connection or done, and I mean he blasts them clear out of the airport. And like I say, they wouldn't know the front end of the airplane from the back end of the airplane. They just have to go by what's going on from the tower out there. And I sit and watch them sometime and think, oh, what they could do with that energy if they just saved it till they needed it, instead of wasting it on all of this tirade, because that's their orbit at that minute. They're in that airport. They have a problem, and it usually can be solved. One of the girls that I sponsor is an employee of Continental, and she's a supervisor, and their supervisors are the ones that you're usually called for. I'm in big trouble here, call a supervisor. And she gets blasted. She was called unkind names the other day, all the way down the hall. The lady was calling her unkind names. And that's putting it real nice. And one of the other passengers that were standing there walked up to her after it was all over with, and he said, how in the world did you resist the impulse to just turn around and blast the tar out of her? She said, I didn't have the time nor energy to do it and to waste it on. And that's exactly, it's an attitude that we can develop towards our fellow man, and this is where we make our beginning. It says, this is a very large order. It's a task which we may perform with increasing skill, but never really finish. Once again, it's reminded them that this is a program of living, and it's a way of life. It's not just a sobriety program. It's like a guide dog that's leading us into a way we can live and be happy. I'm glad it reminds us that these things are things that we're going to be working on and on and on. Says we never really finish. Learning how to live in the greatest peace and partnership and brotherhood with all men and women of whatever description is a moving and fascinating adventure. And those that know me know that that's one of my favorite words, is adventure, because that's what we're all in for in this way of life. Because all of these things open up to us when we're just simply trying to do what's right. All of this good stuff starts happening. I love the word adventure. And it uses it more than once. Every AA has found that he can make little headway in this new adventure of living until he first backtracks and really makes an accurate and unsparing survey of the human wreckage he has left in his wake. To a degree, he's already done this when taking moral inventory, but now the time has come when he ought to redouble his efforts to see how many people he has hurt and in what ways. That's what my little sponsor pointed out to me. What way did you hurt these people, Willie? Let's look at the way, because the way is still there. The hurt you did a long time ago, maybe. But the what way you hurt them, that's become a part of your nature now, and that's what we're going to have to work on. This reopening of emotional wounds, sometime old and sometime perhaps forgotten, and some still painfully festering, will at first look like a purposeless and pointless piece of surgery. But if a willing start, here we go again with that willing start, is made, then the great advantages of doing this will so quickly reveal themselves that the pain will be lessened as one obstacle after another melts away. These obstacles, however, are very real. The first, and one of the most difficult, has to do with forgiveness. The moment we ponder a twisted and broken relationship with another person's, our person, our emotions go on the defensive. That is human nature. To escape looking at the wrongs we've done others, we resentfully focus on the wrong that they have done us. This is especially true if he has, indeed, behaved badly at all. Triumphantly, we seize upon his misbehavior as the perfect excuse for minimizing and forgetting our own. And this is one of the hard parts, but this is as we make this beginning. We can go ahead and put those names down, because see, we're not trying to discover what's wrong with them. We're trying to discover what's wrong with us. So even though we think, where'd my water go? At that particular time, that he did us a lot of wrong, that's not what we're trying to find out. We're trying to find out not only who we have done wrong to, but how we did it. And the how is what we're trying to find out. Thank you, hon, so much. Forgot it. At the bottom of the page, it says, when listing the people that we had harmed, most of us hit another solid obstacle. We got a pretty severe shock when we realized that we were preparing to make a face-to-face admission of our wretched conduct to those we had hurt. It had been embarrassing enough when in confidence we had admitted these things to God and to ourselves and to that other human being. But the prospect of actually visiting or even writing the people concerned now overwhelmed us, especially when we remembered in what poor favor we stood with most of them. There are cases, too, where we have damaged others who are still happily unaware of being hurt. And you know, when I put their names down, it didn't bother me a bit, because I figured they don't even know I hurt them, so I'm not going to have to do anything about them. Wrong. Why, we cried, shouldn't bygones be bygones? Why do we have to think of these people at all? And I told Rose, I said, these women are stationed all over the world now. I don't know where they are. Put them on the list, Willie. She wouldn't let me sidestep anything. Put them on the list, Willie. We're not talking about finding them, honey. We're talking about putting them on the list. These are some of the ways in which, look, what happens. Fear conspired with pride. Both of them are ring around words. Fear conspired with pride to hinder our making a list of all, as Charlie says, squiggly writing. I say ring around word, the people that we had harmed. All of them. Even those that don't even know we did it. At the bottom of page, though in some cases we cannot make restitution at all, and in some cases action ought to be deferred for a while, some serious thinking should be done. We should nevertheless make an accurate and really exhausting survey of our past life as it has affected other people. And what was so odd was that when I found out how it had affected them, I found the flaws in me. I found the things that I was going to have to work on with Willie when I found out how it had affected them. In many instances, we shall find that though the harm done others has not been great, the emotional harm we had done ourselves has. And that's what I was just talking about. When I found out how I hurt them and really put it down there and put their name on the list and thought about it, I saw what alcohol had done to me as a human being. My disregard for other people's feelings to cover up the disregard that I had of myself at that time. I thought so little of Willie that how could I care about anybody else? This is the reason for making the list and trying to make it thoroughly that I didn't understand at first. Very deep, sometimes quite forgotten, damaging emotional conflicts persist below the level of consciousness. At the time of these occurrences, they may actually have given our emotions violent twists, which have since discolored our personalities and altered our lives for the worse. And that's what some of our damaging conduct, not always drunk either, sometimes sober, we had, in between drunks, we had hurt people. And it had given our emotions such a twist that we began to get a little bit of a sort of a good feeling out of making somebody else feel bad. And this was damaging our actual down deep inside soul. While the purpose of making restitution to others is paramount, it is equally necessary that we extricate from an examination of our personal relation every bit of information about ourselves and our fundamental difficulties that we can. Since defective relations with other human beings have nearly always been the immediate cause of our woes, including our alcoholism, no field of investigation could yield more satisfying and valuable rewards than this. Calm, thoughtful reflection upon personal relations can deepen our insight into ourselves. We can go far beyond those things which have superficially were wrong with us to see those flaws which were basic, flaws which sometime were responsible for the whole pattern of our lives. Thoroughness, we have found, will pay and pay handsomely. That's a little promise. We might next ask ourselves what we mean when we say that we have harmed other people. What kind of harm do people do to one another anyway? To define the word harm in a practical way, just a common sense way, excuse me, we may call it the results of instincts in collision, which cause physical, mental, emotional, or spiritual damage to people. Lying to my man. That wasn't right. And like I say, I could even gloss over the fact that maybe I'd lie to him about not having any more liquor in the house, anything concerned with my drinking. That goes right along with alcoholism. That I could gloss over a little bit better. Well, I was drinking and I was protecting my booze and blah, blah. I could, you know, go over that. But this man loved me. And I had no right to do this man emotional harm. And when I would lie to him to make him think, you know, better of me, when I was sober and hadn't had a drink for a long time, but to tell him a lie or to even continue having these bouts with alcohol and robbing him of his emotional security, that's not right. I sometimes think, I don't know why, you know, one of those planes that he was driving didn't plow right straight into the ground. Because sometimes he would leave home and not know what in the world he was going to find when he got home. And these are the things that I had to find out. That I couldn't live like this. I couldn't ever cause emotional hurt to somebody else. That to always step back in a relationship of any kind, of any person that's close and dear to me, to make sure that I don't hurt them in any of these ways, physical, mental, emotional, or spiritual damage. Because human beings do that to each other. They're out there doing it now. It's a normal thing to in order to protect ourselves, we will harm other people in other ways rather than, you know, punch them in the nose. If our tempers are consistently bad, we arouse anger in others. Like I say, storming up there to the gate and blasting the little girl when she didn't have any control over. But, you know, I've seen some of them get pretty riled up, too. So we arouse anger in others when we're angry. So I have to watch my anger from that particular angle. If we lie or cheat, we deprive others not only of their worldly goods, but of their emotional security and their peace of mind. We really issue them an invitation to become contemptuous and vengeful. If our sex conduct is selfish, we may excite jealousy, misery, and a strong desire to retaliate in kind. Such gross misbehavior is not by any means the full catalog of harms that we do. Let us think of some of the subtler, there's our word again. These are the things in living sober that we have to look out for, those little subtle things that keep creeping in. But think of some of the subtler things which can sometimes be quite as damaging. Suppose that in our family lives we happen to be miserly, irresponsible, callous, or cold. And as I talked this morning, sometime I would punish my man by being just like a walking around iceberg. Not for a couple hours, but I'd run it sometime into 2 or 3 days. The whole house would cool off. And you know, this wasn't right. It brought out something in me, because in order to stay that cold and remote and not even saying anything to him, I was hurting me as well as him. Because I couldn't have very much happiness in my heart walking around trying to punish him by not talking to him. Suppose we're irritable and critical and impatient and humorless. Lord. A sense of humor is so important. It's important in a marriage. It's important in our workplace. Because I take my program very seriously. Don't you ever think I don't. When I laugh a lot up here and make jokes and things, don't ever think I don't take this program very seriously. It's just that I have learned not to take Willie very seriously anymore. And it's quite fun to just be able to poke a little fun at yourself and put a little humor into situations. Sometime you can really avoid a volatile situation by just poking a little bit of sense of humor into it. It's fun to try it. Suppose we lavish attention upon one member of the family and neglect the others. What happens when we try to dominate the whole family, either by a rule of iron or by a constant outpouring of minute directions for just how their lives should be lived from hour to hour? Yeah. What happens when we wallow in depression, self-pity oozing from every pore, and inflict upon others about us? Such a roster of harm done others, the kind that make daily living with us as practicing alcoholics difficult and often unbearable. That's why a lot of these men won't stick. They won't stay glued to the spot, because they're not going to hang around a quarrelsome, cross, cold, humorless woman very long. Us old gals will put up with it a little bit longer. But it hurts a man. A man wants his wife to be happy. I have watched some women practically destroy a man for the simple reason that they want to be proud of their women. They want to be proud. And I think that's good. Maybe that's just a viewpoint from my generation. But my man wanted to be proud of his selection as a wife. And when I walked around looking like death warmed over, it didn't reflect on his choice very nicely. And it makes life unbearable sometime for us day after day, for no real reason except just to wallow in our own self-pity, to make a day miserable for the people that we live with. This could be extended almost indefinitely. When we take such personal traits as these in the shop, office, the society of our fellows, they can do damage almost as extensive as that we have caused at home. On over the last paragraph of this little step. Whenever our pencil falters on this list, and that's all we're doing, remember, in step 8, we can fortify and cheer ourselves by remembering what AA experience in this step has meant to others. It is the beginning of the end of isolation from our fellows and from God. What a beautiful promise. That step, just making that list, putting it down, thinking over it. This is our beginning of the end of our isolation. You know that loneliness. You men know the loneliness of sitting in those bars and having the bar full of people, but you felt like there wasn't anybody there but you. We've known that loneliness as women. And I don't want that anymore. Circumstances has made it that I am alone now as far as being alone. But being alone, I don't have to be lonely. I don't have to isolate myself from people. And in this step where I learn to reach out to other people and to really care about other people, this is going to fill up my life for me. This will do it. I won't have to walk around. This is not the way I planned for our lives together to end. I figured we'd go out, you know, pretty much together and grow older together. But that's not the way it's worked out. Therefore, this knowing that I don't have to live in isolation, it makes it so much easier. So I'm glad that back in that step, I began to put a love of people, because I can let people love me. They can take up this big empty void that I have in my life now. You married to a man for 47 years. That's the majority of my life was invested in this one man. But see, the thousands of people that I come in contact with each and every year of what the years I have left, I do not look back and worry about getting, because I refuse to get old. I don't mind getting older. Don't mind getting older. In fact, I want to get older and older and older and older. But that doesn't mean I have to get old. Because a close association with my fellow man will keep me from getting old. That's the one thing that'll do it. Let's go over to step 9 now, because we're going to cover both steps here. Made a principle behind step 9 is another one that, dear Lord, we need to start practicing so that we can use it in all of our affairs, and that is judgment. Judgment. Made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. I have one of the old 12 and 12s that step reads, made direct amends to such people whenever possible. And they changed that, because they realized, don't give an alcoholic that much room. Just whenever possible, whenever you get around to it. Oh, no. They changed it, but I value that old book because I remember, you know, why they changed it. They didn't want me to wait around, and it's always show it to my girls when we were working our steps, and we'd go through that. I show them the old edition and tell them that's why it says wherever possible, and not whenever. So let's don't put this thing off too long. In the very first sentence, it gives us some real good words to remember. Good judgment, a careful sense of timing, courage, and prudence. Careful, careful, careful. These are the qualities we shall need when we take step 9. We've made our list. Now we're fixing to take it. But those are the qualities. Not only if you're taking it yourself, think about those qualities as you start out. In fact, I, like my girls, I'll tell them, you know, maybe it'll help us if we write, after we've made our list, if we write these statements down. Good judgment, a careful sense of timing, courage, and prudence. Maybe it'll help us get into this step 9 with caution, because this is a step where we can hurt people. And this is what we're trying to quit doing. After we have made the list of people we have harmed, having reflected carefully upon each instance, and have tried to possess ourselves of the right attitude. Man, that has a lot to do with step. It takes the sting out of step 9. If we look upon it as an adventure and say, look, a lot of people never get to clear up the damage they've done to other people. So they have to carry it and carry it and carry it. But we have this, if we can develop that attitude, which Rose helped me to develop, the attitude of, you know, Willie, we're fixing to do something here that's going to do you some good, honey. It's just like taking a real good antibiotic to clear up an infection. Because when you get through with the infection, you're through with it. So we're fixing to do something good for you. So let's shape up here and not be all hang dog about doing this thing, because you're going to get all the good fallout from it. That good attitude, the right attitude in which to proceed, we will see that the making of direct amends divide those we should approach into several classes. Joe and Charlie came from the big book on those different classes. We need to do some of them right now. Our column on right now, our column on later, our column on maybe, and our column on never. Because it's good to put that never down there, because it relieves us of that in the beginning. Because then as we proceed along, some of those nevers don't seem so bad. Go down to the bottom of the page. It said, most of us begin making certain kinds of direct amends from the day we go into or join Alcoholics Anonymous. The moment we tell our families that we are really going to try the program, the process has begun. See, even though I kept drinking, but isn't it odd? I kept going back to AA. And see, each time I was giving my man a little something. Because each time he would hope, well, maybe this time he's going to get it done. Because he already had faith in the program, because he believed every word in that big book. And he had faith. Each time, even though I wasn't a booming success in the beginning, each time I'd tell him, honey, I'm going to go back to meetings and I'm going to try again. Even though deep in my heart, I doubted very seriously whether I was ready. And even I was going back sometime just to sort of lull him into a sense of, get off my back, you know, that, even though my motive might not have been right. But at least the process of healing, when he saw that I was going to try to do something, he had enough love for me and enough faith in me to know that, okay, she's trying again. In this area, there are seldom any questions about timing or caution. We want to come in the door shouting the good news. Well, Bill, I don't know how many of us really wanted to do that, but it's the thought that he's trying to get over to us. After coming from our first meeting, or perhaps after having finished reading the big book, Alcoholics Anonymous, we actually want to sit down with some member of the family and readily admit the damage that we have done by our drinking. And in many cases, that's true. In many cases, we aren't really that thrilled about the meeting or the book or anything else. See, the main thing, don't throw a blanket over your head and try to feel like that you're different, because this is an encompassing program. Every feeling that you've ever had is shared by somebody in this room, somebody in all the rooms that you go to. Almost always we want to go further and admit other defects that have made us hard to live with. He's given us an example of some of the things not to do. This will be a very different occasion, and in sharp contrast with those hangover mornings when we alternated between reviling ourselves and blaming the family and everybody else for our troubles. At this first sitting, it is necessary only that we make a general admission of our defects. It may be unwise at this stage to rehash certain harrowing episodes. Oh yeah, this is not a good time for it in the very beginning, to really go into everything. Because there's where our good judgment comes in. We'll suggest that we ought to take our time. While we may be quite willing to reveal the very worst, we must be sure that we cannot buy our own peace of mind at the expense of others. Much of the same approach will apply at the office or factory. We should at once think of the few people who know all about our drinking and who have been most affected by it. Which he's telling us, we know, we don't have to put a memo up on the bulletin board. We think of those people that are the closest to us and the ones that have been affected by our drinking. Bosses that have covered for us. Co-workers that have covered for us. Bosses that we've lied to. Co-workers we've lied to. So we look at that area. But even in these cases, we may need to use a little more discretion than we did with the family. We may not want to say anything for several weeks or longer. This was one that I had to deal with. I had continued to teach all during my drinking, of course, because I was a spree drinker. I drank on the weekends, sobered up Sunday night, got back in the classroom on Monday morning. I know that sort of hurts all you good taxpayers, but Mondays I really didn't sometimes teach very much. The body was just there. And I didn't dare try to write on that blackboard.
Ooh!
If that chalk would have squawked one time, I would have probably jumped clear out the ceiling. But school boards are really not very patient with being told, hey, by the way, I'm an alcoholic, and I have gone into Alcoholics Anonymous, and I intend to recover. No, they don't really go for that too much, and neither do us taxpayers. I really don't particularly want a drunk in the classroom teaching my kid, even if she's sober. See, my teaching, I had always enjoyed it so much and loved it from the very first classroom I ever walked into. But it was going. I wasn't drunk when I walked in that classroom. I was physically sober, but mentally sober? Uh-uh. I was changing. I was not the good teacher that I had been. And I was robbing the taxpayers. But I had to be very careful about discussing that. In some professions, you have to use that good judgment and see whether just becoming the very best teacher that classroom can hold, to the very best of your ability, maybe that's the amends. You have to look at your profession and see and make sure that you're not making excuses, that you're facing reality. Because most people, even if you say, you know, I'm an alcoholic, but I'm in Alcoholics Anonymous, I haven't had a drink for 36 years. Well, in some professions that goes over like a lead balloon. It just doesn't. Because when you say you're an alcoholic, that automatically tells them that, you know, any time now you may walk into work drunk or lard, clothed or unclothed, and all these things that they know and think about alcoholics. Good judgment, that's all it's asking us for. First, we shall wish, there in the middle of that paragraph, to be reasonably certain that we are on the AA beam. That we really are trying to get our lives together. And we are getting better. Then we're ready to go to these people to tell them what AA is and what we're trying to do. If we do decide to do it, then we go in and we don't just say, you know, I'm an alcoholic and I know I've caused a lot of trouble on the job, if that be the case. But from now on, I'm going to try to do better. No, that won't get it done. Against this background, we can freely admit the damage that we have done and make our apologies. We can pay or promise to pay whatever obligation, financial or otherwise. The generous response of most people to such quiet sincerity will often astonish us. Even our severest and most justified critics will frequently meet us more than halfway on that first trial. A lot of other good judgment statements are in this step 9 in our little book. Our last paragraph on page 5087 of this step. It says, above all, we should try to be absolutely sure that we're not delaying because we're afraid. I always like to think of the statement, you know, if God, this is the way, I'm going to try to be the way God wants me to be. And if God's for me, who can be against me? You know, they might not forgive me and all that, but they can't justifiably, if they're still against me, that's their problem. I have to do what I have to do. But we can't delay because we're afraid. Somebody's holding our hand. Don't ever doubt it. For the readiness to take the full consequences of our past acts and to take responsibility for the well-being of others at the same time is the very spirit of step 9. And of course, as you know, it's only after step 9 that our promises appear. This is when we know that we have taken these action steps. We have put these principles one by one and started practicing on each one of them. So we know we're going forward instead of backwards. Don't dread it. Look forward to it as a great adventure. Let me just leave you with this one. 3 minutes. This one little thing that I ran across that I like, and it's AA stuff. I don't know exactly. I think it came out of a grapevine. It says, when you change, and I know a lot of you have seen it, when you change your thinking, you change your beliefs. When you change your beliefs, you change your expectations. When you change your expectations, you change your attitude. When you change your attitude, you change your behavior. When you change your behavior, you change your performance. And when you change your performance, you change your whole life. So attitude on step 8 and 9 has a lot to do with it. See you in the morning. Have a good evening.